ever had a stupid question? Well, we're here to answer it. Welcome to This Is a Stupid Question, But. I'm your host, Mahnor.
And I'm Amy, and this is a podcast where we find all our smart answers to all our stupid science questions.
And this week, we're answering the stupid science question, what is an immune system? Mm-hmm. And yeah, so similar to what we did 2 weeks ago, where you quizzed me, it's going to be me quizzing you now because you are an immunologist.
In training.
I think you officially are one.
Yeah, at what point do you see?
Yeah, at what point do you like become a scientist by official terms?
I don't think. Because technically I was studying the immune system when I was in school, so I was an immunologist then.
Well, you work on it now, like, so maybe, or maybe when we get our PhDs. I don't know. Maybe then. One would hope at some point we can officially call ourselves scientists.
For the first few years, my mum referred to me to her friends as an ologist of some sort. She does some sort of ology.
Something to do with science. She's helping people. That's all that matters.
Exactly.
But yeah, so it's just going to be me asking you questions about the immune system. Okay. But I guess before we get into it, do you want to give an overview of the immune system, if that's possible? You have a quote for me, don't you?
It's not a quote, it's okay. It is, you know, I'm a sucker for like the history of words. I don't know why I love it so much. But anyway, I didn't know this one, even though I've been studying immunology. I looked up where the word immune comes from. And it comes from the Latin words in munis, which mean not and ready for service. So immune literally translates to not ready for service or exempt from public service or charge. And then it was used in reference to how your body protects you from disease.
Because it wasn't ready to service.
It just wasn't ready to deal with the disease, basically. But yeah,
that's cool.
So your immune system is made up of a lot of different cells and pathways that all work together to protect you from any danger that comes into your body. So by that danger, I mean any bacteria that are not helpful to you, that are dangerous, or any viruses, or even any cells that are your own cells that just go bad, they mutate, and that's an example of, say, cancer. Mm-hmm. So your immune system is made, it's like a little army within your body. It's made to protect you and keep you alive, but there's lots of things that can go wrong with it, and that's the part that I find most interesting. Like, when does the immune system go wrong, and why is it going wrong, and how can we stop it? So by that I mean, when the immune system is overactive, it can give you things like autoimmunity or allergies. When it's underactive, you could have fatal infections or cancer. Mm-hmm. And it's all about a balance. So you want, well, there's a good analogy that I thought I came up with myself. It turns out someone else already has.
Need you to
it. It's the Goldilocks theory. So you know Goldilocks, when she goes into the Three Bears' house, the first porridge she gets is too cold, and then the next one's too hot, but then she finds the just right one.
Yep.
That's like your immune system. You don't want too much, where you get autoimmunity and allergies. You don't want too little, that you get cancer and fatal infections. You want the one in the middle that's just right.
Oh, look at you. You came up with that.
No, I wish I did. I thought I did, and then
Well, you technically did, because you didn't know it existed.
So, yeah. I came up with it.
But you can't take credit for it in the public, is all.
Exactly. But yeah, it's a good way to sum up why your immune system needs to be in a balance.
Mm-hmm. So how does your immune system know what is danger then?
That's a really good question, and it is, there's a lot of things we still don't know. Mm-hmm. The initial theory was that you had self and non-self, and that's how your immune system recognized not what to kill and what not to kill. So by that I mean self would be your own cells, and then non-self would be bacteria, viruses, things that are not from your body. But that theory didn't make sense in a lot of cases. So why does your body not kill your gut bacteria, which are always there in your body? Why does it not kill a fetus, which is half someone else's, or the sperm even, which fertilizes your egg? And why can you eat food and that be in your body and it doesn't react to that all the time? So it just doesn't make sense. And then the other reason it doesn't make sense is, why does your immune system attack cancer cells, which are self?
Yep.
So the new model, which was proposed by Polly Matzinger, immunology hero. She proposed this danger model and basically said that you need danger to come along with this situation for your immune system to recognize it and start attacking it. So that's why when we say we give a vaccine, although it's an activated part of a virus, so it's not going to cause you harm, we add these things called adjuvants in it, which basically just stimulate the parts of the immune system that are like danger receptors, mm-hmm. and tells the immune system this thing that we're giving you is dangerous, so now you should activate yourself and induce an immune response against it. Whereas when you eat food, you don't get these danger things, so unless you're allergic.
What if I took just adjuvants? Would my mm-hmm. immune system go crazy?
If you were injected just the adjuvants, your immune system has become activated, but there'd be nothing there for the immune system to pick up.
So it's not stimulate. Like it would get hypersensitive.
No, it would just become activated, but there would be nothing with your adjuvants for it to be stimulated against. But if you were to inject, say, the flu vaccine without the adjuvants, you would become what is known as tolerant to it,
mm-hmm.
where you would respond to the virus and the way you don't want it to. You would just create this tolerance response where your immune system recognises it's there but sees it as not dangerous and will create these regulatory cells which don't want to kill the virus anymore. So you need these adjuvants.
Does that only happen with a vaccine?
It happens with food.
Okay.
So obviously your food is not self. So the different parts of your food or even your gut microbiome, your immune system knows it's there, but it knows it's not causing any harm.
Yeah.
So I should have said what danger things are. So danger is when you're harming, there's harm happen or insult happen to your own cells, and your cells will increase these stress receptors called danger-associated molecular patterns, which are recognized by different cells in the immune system, and it'll activate them. Or bad bacteria and viruses have pathogen associated molecular patterns, again, which the immune system recognizes. So in that case, your body can be tolerant to the food you eat and the bacteria that's in the gut and on your skin, and even things that you put on your skin like makeup and stuff, is tolerant because it's not causing danger, it's not causing irritation.
Cool. So now that there's like a danger inside your body and your immune system recognizes it, what does it do with it?
Okay. So there's lots of different cells at play, and we'll be here forever. We talk about them all. We talk about my favorites.
I only thought
there
were just B and T cells.
No, there's a lot more. And B doesn't stand for boring, although I find them boring.
What was it? I was listening to a podcast and there was an immunologist on it, and it's basically said that immunologists basically hate on other immunologists who work on different cells.
So we all have our bias and we all think our own cell is the best cell. So for instance, I work on dendritic cells and I think they're the best. Other people work on T cells. Actually, I really appreciate T cells as my second favorite. But the ones I hate are B cells. I just find them boring. I'm not going to say all the ones I hate because I don't want to like piss people off, but there's many that I don't
piss
like
the B cells off at least. Yeah.
I'll talk about them. But so your question was what happens then when the immune system sees a danger?
Yep.
Let's just pretend you've got a cut.
Yes.
You've just been cut and that exposes you to the outside world, which means you can get bacteria and dirt and everything getting into your body. So there'll be immune cells there that are resident in your skin, and they'll recognise that there's a cut happens, so your cells that are have been cut are dead, and stress goes up. This will induce the production of different molecules that send out signals to bring in professional immune cells. So you have two arms of the immune system. You've got the innate and you've got the adaptive. The innate is really quick and is basically just instant protection. It's not specific, it's just instant protection. So they'll try to induce the healing of the cut, and they'll try and bring in the more specific cells. But the important one, which links the innate and the adaptive being more specific and actually can kill the cells that have been infected with a virus, or they're just the ones you want to get to the site of inflammation.
Yep.
The cell that links these two arms together is called the dendritic cell.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do, they're always in your body everywhere. They swim about your body and they pick up parts. They basically eat. They do this process called phagocytosis, where they just eat whatever is in the environment.
Yep.
And they'll, every so often, they'll just migrate slowly to the lymph nodes. But when they see danger, they become activated and they get themselves to the lymph node really quickly. And in the lymph node, they find what is known as the T and the B cells, which you talked about. So these cells are your adaptive cells. They'll kill basically bacteria and viruses, etc., based on specific patterns known as antigens. So when you have a virus that comes into your body, it has antigens on it, and this is just basically molecules that our body can recognize. And we have T cells and B cells, which are specific to these antigens. Okay, so the dendritic cell will bite up bits of the virus and take it to the lymph nodes and show it to the T and B cells and cause the activation of these cells.
Okay.
The T and the B cells, they'll come back to the site of inflammation. The T cells will specifically kill the virally infected cells, and your B cells will release things called antibodies.
Yep.
And they'll bind to the cells infected with the virus, or they'll bind to the bacteria, and they'll induce other cells to come in and kill them. Does that make sense?
Yes. And that happens basically every time your body detects something foreign.
Not foreign, but dangerous.
Dangerous. Okay, what's the difference?
So... it's this thing with the inducing danger or stress. So it's not going to happen if you just eat a bit of food, because that's foreign, you know. But if you eat something that causes inflammation,
then it's dangerous.
Then it's dangerous to
your body. So if something, can something dangerous come into your body and not cause inflammation? Is that possible?
It can hide from the immune system and downregulate things that induce this activation of the dendritic cells or other immune cells. So different viruses can do this. They'll try and hide within the cell that they've infected by downregulating different signals.
And that cancer keeps the inflammation down. Yes,
exactly.
Yeah.
It tries to keep the inflammation down because it knows the inflammation is going to kill it.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay.
Okay, so what happens when your body does not recognize dangerous stuff and starts recognizing yourself?
Good question. That's when we have autoimmunity or allergies.
Yep. And why does that happen?
Yeah, it's a good question. The most common theory for it is this two-hit hypothesis, where there's something in your genetics which makes you more likely or predisposed to having an autoimmunity or an allergy, and then the other part of the two-hit hypothesis is something in the environment. So maybe you've had an infection which has triggered it, or just your lifestyle has triggered it, basically, right? So basically, there's lots of things that can trigger these autoimmunities. If you don't have the genes to predispose you, then you might not get them. But in this case, what happens is your dendritic cells will pick up antigen and take it to the T and B cells and activate it against your own cells, right? And this is because they see these cells as dangerous.
Yep.
And you can have lots of different autoimmunities. So you can have specific ones that, for instance, diabetes, which will kill certain cells which produce insulin in your body. But another type of situation you can get in this case is allergies, but it's not your own cells, but it's harmless things like dust or pollen.
And your body just reacts negatively.
Exactly. So this is the kind of the consequence of having such a strong immune system that you're going to have things like this happen.
Okay.
And that's why we want this, you know, that we've evolved with bacteria and parasites and viruses. And the consequence of protecting ourselves from them is that sometimes people get autoimmunity and allergies.
Okay. So do you reckon, so I think we've discussed this before, where people who live in environments where they're more exposed to stuff, is there a correlation where they have less allergies?
Yes, so this is the hygiene hypothesis, and basically it suggests that in Western countries especially, they're getting more clean.
Yep.
Kids grow up with less bacteria and viruses and parasites around them, and basically what we think is that when we have these bacteria etc around us that maybe aren't harmful enough to kill us, they do something that trains our immune system and basically stops our immune system from overreacting in the future. So it's a very new, not a new theory, but a new field. And we don't know the ins and outs of why it happens.
Yeah.
But it's
because I guess we're just now noticing this happening. Well, by now, I mean like quite recently compared to
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, we have better diagnostic techniques and stuff now, but allergies and autoimmunity are going up, where infection deaths are going down. And you even see now in countries that aren't westernized, even though now that they're getting more hygiene and more medical interventions that stop them dying from infections, the allergies and autoimmunity are going up. But there's a really good group of people that shows a good example of this. Basically, it's the Amish and the Hutterites.
Correct.
Don't know if you've heard of them. But they're, have you heard of them?
The Amish, yes.
The Hutterites are very similar. They're from the same group of people that migrated to America.
Cool, so they're in America along as well. With them.
Yes. One of the main differences between the Amish and the Hutterites is their farming techniques.
Yep.
So Amish people use a lot of animals to farm, whereas the Hutterites use kind of modern technology.
Oh, okay.
And what they see is, although the genetics are really similar between these groups, the Amish have a lot less allergies than the Hutterites, and when they take dust from the houses of Amish people and put them into mice, these mice can be protected from allergies in the future. So basically the idea is that because the Amish people are living around animals, they're picking up all these microbes that are around the animals, and this is doing something to train their immune system to keep it regulated,
and they have less allergies.
Exactly.
That's cool.
So it's very cool. And I think a common misconception is that you want a really strong immune system.
Yeah.
And you hear people saying, like, oh, I need to boost my immune system to make it really strong.
And we'll come to that.
We will come to that. But having a really strong immune system actually doesn't mean you're super healthy. It means that you're more likely to have allergies and autoimmunity.
Your body's going to reject your food.
Exactly. You want a regulated immune system. So you want something to regulate your immune system.
Goldilocks.
The Goldilocks
all comes back to her. Oh, that's so cool. Okay, so actually we can talk about the boosted immune system now. So especially now during COVID times, there was a lot of marketing on there's a lot of cereals, there's a lot of juices, there's like anything imaginable out there that will boost your immune system. How accurate is that?
I actually seen I was in the shop the other day, and there was a loaf of bread from a brand I will not name. And it said, like, the brand name bread will boost your immune system.
Yeah.
It's very stressful.
Let me guess, it has
like
vitamin C in it, wasn't it?
Right. So the immune system needs all these things to be regulated. Yeah. But we get them from a normal diet.
Yes. It's just nourishment, so your body works normally.
Exactly. The best way, I'm not going to say boost, because like I said, we don't want a too strong immune system.
Yes.
The best way to support your immune system is just being healthy. And by that I mean getting a varied diet with 5 fruit and veg a day, and exercising. You know, it doesn't mean that you have to go and eat this whole loaf of bread, or you have to buy supplements. A lot of these supplements are literally just an expensive pee, because they're not absorbed properly by your body.
Exactly.
So unless you have some sort of maybe like you're vegetarian or something, and you have
you're
to
not
get
getting
your
like your daily amount in for whatever reason.
Exactly. You don't want more of, sometimes actually having more of certain things can be worse for you.
Yep.
You just want to get the right amount, and that's normally from a full range diet. And like I said, if you're a vegetarian or you have an intolerance to something, you can get these things from the supplements. But if you're just a normal person exercising, and by that I don't mean going to the gym 5 times a day, I mean like walking.
Just like keeping a healthy lifestyle.
Exactly. Then you don't need to boost your immune system.
Can
your immune
you boost
system
it, though? Like
can you boost it?
Like, you've said supporting your immune system by being healthy, but can you boost it?
So, I guess, I don't know if, like, a normal person could boost it.
Yeah, like, could you make your immune system stronger?
Yes, there are drugs that do this, but they're for very particular reasons.
Yeah, people who have very weak immune systems, I'm guessing.
Yes, So, one example, I'll just use this because we do cancer. We study cancer.
We do cancer.
A lot of the times when you have cancer, it hides in your immune system. I think I spoke about this in the cancer episode, how your immune system can't see it anymore, or that cancer directly inhibits the immune system. There's certain drugs that have been made which inhibit the thing that the cancer does to inhibit the immune system. So it puts a barrier between the cancer and the T cell in this case.
It stops the cancer cell from telling them to shut up.
Exactly. So that boosts the T cell's function in the cancer. But you wouldn't just give this drug to like a normal individual. Because
they don't have cancer in them.
Exactly. So I don't think you would just go about boosting your immune system, yeah. But supporting it is probably the best way to put it, cool. If that makes sense.
Yes, you can't boost your immune system. That's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've talked about like having a really high immune system.
Yep.
When do you get instances of people having like low immune systems? And I guess you can bring cancer into this,
yep.
as well.
So lots of different things. Cancer, I've already spoke about, directly mm-hmm. inhibits the immune system or hides from it. There's different conditions. So I guess I'll talk about the conditions first. So you can have things that are, for instance, severe immunodeficiencies.
Yep.
Have you heard of Bubble Boy?
No, who's Bubble Boy?
I'm going to show you a picture.
Who the hell's Bubble Boy?
Bubble Boy. But Bubble Boy is this boy here.
Oh, he's in a bubble.
He's literally in a plastic bubble.
Was he like immunocompromised?
He was severely immunocompromised. Ooh. So
was this a genetic? Was he born with this? Mm-hmm. Or oh, okay.
So David Vetter was his name, this little mm-hmm. boy who is also known as Bubble Boy. I think there's a movie out about him.
Oh, okay.
He had this condition called SCID.
SCID.
Uh-huh. And okay. It's severe combined immunodeficiency disorder. Sorry. Yeah, and it's a genetic thing, and it basically causes, it means you're born without certain essential immune cells.
Oh, wow. And you can survive?
If you live in a bubble.
So was he in a bubble as soon as he was born?
Yeah, pretty much. And it's those T and B cells I told you about, you mm-hmm. don't have any of them. And you don't, your life expectancy is really not high at all. He was yeah. born in 1971 and he died in 1984.
That's like,
so he was such a young teenager.
That's much longer even than as someone who does not have an immune system, basically.
Exactly. But that's because he lived in a bubble, but it means that you're susceptible to all disease because you don't have these adaptive immune cells which will specifically kill it.
Yeah.
You need your T and B cells basically to survive.
The Amy B cells are kind of important.
They're kind of important, they're important. But yeah, so that's like an example of a condition you can have. There's ones that are obviously less severe, but means yep. that you have immunodeficiencies.
Yep. But you can get it from like diseases like HIV as well.
Exactly. So that's my next one. So HIV is a virus. So a lot of viruses, for example, influenza will infect your epithelial cells of your lung.
Yep.
HIV infects your T cells or a particular subset of your T cells. Mm-hmm. So again, this means it'll kill off a certain subset of your T cells and render you more susceptible to disease. So a lot of people with HIV don't die of that virus. They die because they get AIDS, acquired immunodeficiency disorder. Mm-hmm. It means that they're more susceptible to dying of things that someone without AIDS would not die of.
Cool.
So really, yes. Like non-fatal disease in mm-hmm. a healthy individual. There's other ones that I don't know if you class them as immunodeficiency, but it's when you have this dysregulated immune system. So
okay.
An example would be like a blood cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So you have so many immune cells that it gets rid of all your regulated ones and your immune system just goes goes wild. And you're
Does it just attack everything?
You get like autoimmunity symptoms, but also although you have loads of immune cells, they don't know what to do properly and you're more susceptible to disease again.
Oh, so it's like the opposite of what you'd expect.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
so you know how people with HIV can live normal lives these days? Mm-hmm. What are the drugs doing? Because I've never understood it.
You know? I'm not a virologist. I think
I was like, in case they did something with the immune system.
Yeah, obviously you'd have your antiviral drugs will try and kill the virus.
Yep.
There's other things where they can do. There was actually, I don't know if you've seen like the first man cured of HIV.
Yes.
And basically he was given a bone marrow transplant. I think he had leukemia. So he was given a bone marrow transplant to treat that. And what it did was it gave him T cells which were resistant to HIV.
And you can have T cells resistant to HIV.
Yeah, it's just that's like evolution.
That's so cool. You'd think by the amount of different T cells we have, one of them would be resistant.
So it's the receptor on T cells that HIV recognizes that can go in. So it's not like...
It's not like the antibodies where there's a million of them. I've gotten confused.
Yes, you've gotten confused.
CD4.
A receptor which is conserved on CD4 T cells.
Yep, mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense. Cool. So, since you work on immune system and cancer,
mm-hmm.
how do those two linked why together. Linked?
For yeah. a long while, no one thought they did link because yes, of this kind of
this was new to me.
Yes, exactly. Actually, there's a load of things that I'm going to shock you with that are involved in the immune system, but we'll get to that.
Let's hear it.
At the time, the theory was a self-non-self theory. Mm-hmm. So if that theory was correct, then your body couldn't react to cancer. And also, yes. cancers don't have... a lot of cancers don't have a lot of immune cells in it. Although, mm-hmm. even very early on in the days where they were cutting out cancers and looking at it under the microscope, they could see immune cells.
Yeah.
It was just kind of...
They were like, it's just on. There.
Exactly. However, there was people who did think it was involved, and these were tumour immunologists who were laughed at. They were like, oh, the tumour immunologists
your
are here.
Face.
Exactly. Like, they're not important. And then... We showed them otherwise.
Now then, it's like the thing.
Exactly.
In cancer.
The reason it's now got such a spotlight is because there was a Nobel Prize awarded to Jim Allison and Antishu Kohonjo. Mm-hmm. And this is because they discovered certain receptors, such as proteins, which are on T cells that become inhibited or are used by the cancer to inhibit the T cells. And when you block these receptors, the T cells can then work again and kill the cancer cells. So that won the Nobel Prize. And
that was very cool.
It's very cool. And
I remember when I found out about it, I was like, what?
What?
Happens?
I actually sort of remember being in immunology in uni, and although like these things had happened then, it still shocked me when I found out cancer was involved in the immune system.
Yeah, same.
And then
I first found out about it in uni when you hear about cancer. Well, at least when we were in uni, it was just starting. So you don't hear about, I never grew up hearing immune system and cancer.
Exactly. But it's usually so mutations many things now, cardiovascular disease, atherosclerosis, controlled mm-hmm. by the immune system. Some people think that a lot of mental health conditions are associated with the immune system.
Oh.
Yes. I think it's like...
Wait, you've told me depression?
Uh-huh. When you're sick, your body goes into depression mode so that you don't go out, expend your energy and get other infections. Mm-hmm. Other things, all the autoimmunities I've talked about, for a while people didn't think they were involved.
Mm-hmm.
Other thing is important is reproduction. So in developing the system, protecting the baby.
Yes.
But
not attacking the baby.
A lot of miscarriages happen because the immune system isn't regulated.
Ooh.
Yep.
And they attack.
Yeah, because a baby is half not you in causing this kind of damage in the womb. It's stretching the womb.
Oh my God, yeah. Your body doesn't even attack sperm, does it?
Mm-mm.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Wait, so isn't there a specific antigen that if a woman has and her baby has, it means it attacks, it starts with R?
That's helpful.
it's the fact that, so if a woman has a child that doesn't have, that doesn't have the antigen, the first time she gives birth to the child, it won't attack it, but then her body gets exposed and creates antibodies against it. And then the second child she has, it could attack it because now she has antibodies against her.
I've never heard of that. Let's find it. It's a disease, a rhesus disease, and it's when the pregnant woman has antibodies which recognize a specific protein in the baby's blood.
Yes.
And it causes hemolytic disease of the fetus, which I'm assuming means lysis or bursting open of the blood vessels.
Not good.
And the newborn. It doesn't harm the mother, but it can cause the baby to become anemic and develop jaundice.
Mm-hmm. But not the first baby, because your body's protected from the first baby. But when you're giving birth, you could get exposed to the baby's fluids. And then you create antibodies against it. Which was cool.
I've never heard of that.
I was like, my first baby's safe. My second is not. If I have these antibodies. I don't even know if I have the protein.
That's a weird thing to think, but I'm glad that you're okay. But yeah, I've not heard of that disease. Thanks for telling me.
No worries. Mm. I'm glad I could teach you something.
Yeah, exactly.
But yes, so this immune system and cancer thing. So we're saying that cancer can kind of control your immune system?
Yes, but also...
Regulate it, maybe?
Yes, so your cancer can, in a way, control the immune system. So your cancer can promote the infiltration of inhibitory immune cells. So mm-hmm. you know how we've got this balance in the immune system where you don't want too much and we don't want too little?
Yes.
There's cells in your immune system which can either, say, kill infected cells, and there's ones that stop other immune cells from killing those infected cells. Mm-hmm. They're like breaks in the immune system, and they tell the activated killer cells to stop.
Mm-hmm.
So your cancer can promote them to come into the tumour, mm-hmm. and it can directly inhibit these killer cells.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when the cancer controls the immune system, or the cancer can just hide from the immune system. It yeah. shuts down these antigens that I told you about, stops presenting them, and the immune system can't find it.
Okay.
But what's more cool, and I don't know if you all have heard of this, is when the immune system itself actually molds the cancer, it controls the growth of the cancer.
No, what?
Yes. So this is called cancer immunoediting, and it's okay. pretty much survival of the fittest. A tumor, so
which is what cancer is like great at, isn't it?
Yeah. So I think we've talked about it before, where you give a cancer a drug and the ones that are resistant survive.
Yes. It's
the same thing with the immune system. When the immune system sees cancer, that it recognizes.
Oh, I remember this. I skipped yeah. a lecture because I didn't understand it.
Well, you're not gonna
this is my moment.
This is your moment. You're gonna understand.
You can explain it to me now.
It's easy. So your immune system will see the cancer or mm-hmm. particular cells within the tumour, because they're all different, and it will kill the ones it recognises, and okay. that will mean that it will leave the ones that it doesn't recognise, and mm-hmm. allow them to grow. So your immune system will come in early on, start trying to kill the tumour, but by the time the tumour is huge, it's because the immune system can no longer recognise it, or can no longer deal with it, because it's been inhibited.
Because it ended up selecting for the resistance.
Exactly, so it's moulded it itself.
That's so cool. Mm-hmm.
And then obviously, know what it was doing. You have situations where increased inflammation can induce cancer, because if you keep having inflammation, it's almost like a buildup of scar tissue. You keep mm-hmm. getting this replication of your own cells, and it can induce cancer.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So I think this is a good segue for you to explain what you do mm-hmm. in terms of the immune system and cancer.
Okay, so I talked to you about my favourite cells, the dendritic cells.
Yes.
I'll give you a fun fact about them. So, the man that discovered them, discovered mm-hmm. the dendritic cells, is called Ralph Steinman.
Mm-hmm.
And he discovered them, and right away he started testing if they could be used for anything in particular. He thought dendritic cells are really good at picking up these antigens and taking them to the lymph nodes and activating T cells. So he thought, if I take the dendritic cells, put them in a dish, and give them the antigen I want them to see, and then put them back into the body, then maybe they'll be able to activate the T cells against this antigen.
Okay, yep.
He was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and was given a special approval from the FDA to guide the treatment of his own cancer. So he had bits of his tumour, his mm-hmm. dendritic cells, making dendritic cells. Vaccines are called, where they load these dendritic
and then you
cells.
Inject your dendritic cells back. Mm-hmm.
So they would load the dendritic cells with antigens from his own cancer and put them back in his body and see if they would kill the cancer cells. He had people in other labs testing drugs on his cancer cells.
Oh my god.
And pancreatic cancer obviously doesn't have a good survival rate, and we don't know if he's only one person, so we don't know if his treatments worked, but he survived. Yeah. I think he survived a few years when he was only given a few months to live.
Wow.
Next fun fact about Ralph Steinman is he was awarded the Nobel Prize for his discovery of dendritic cells.
Mm-hmm.
Nobel committee phone him up.
Yeah.
To be like, we're going to award you the Nobel Prize. It was the day after he died, and his wife answered the phone, and the Nobel committee were like, oh God, what were you going to do? Because they're not meant to award it to someone who is dead.
Who's dead, yeah.
And they awarded it to him anyway. So he's the only person, since the rules changed, so there's obviously people in the past, but since the rules changed, he's the only person known to have been, or not known, the only person to have been awarded the Nobel Prize while not there to see him.
That's so cool. I didn't know he was the one. So
I'll get back to the science then. That was the history.
Fun fact.
Thank you. These are my favourite cells, the dendritic cells. And I told you already that they migrate normally from tissues mm-hmm. to lymph nodes, and they just talk to T cells and they're like, hey guys, there's nothing going on. They're almost like police. So they're patrolling the body.
Yeah.
And then they go back to headquarters and they just say to the B cells, like, no, there's nothing going on. You're fine. Just chill.
Or we have an issue, guys. Come on.
Yes. So when they get the issue, say they're in the tissue now, so that I say tissue, which should say like the lung, they're in an organ, mm-hmm. and they see a virus, they'll panic, they'll go into alarm mode, and they'll put up these different receptors on their surface. And I just imagine like mm-hmm. little flags or like a little alarm, you know, the little like Nino.
Yeah, just yeah, like, wee, wee,
exactly,
wee,
like on a cop car. So they'll put them up and they'll get to the lymph node rapid, like they'll just go for it. And when they get to the lymph node, they'll then show the little flag, which has a bit of the virus on it, so the antigen, and they'll go yep. through all the T cells, because there's millions of T cells there that all recognize different like, things. Do you recognize it? No. Do you recognize it? No. Do you recognize it? And then they'll.
Have you seen this person?
Exactly.
Have you
seen this person? And I think it's like. So they've got all these T cells that either don't recognize it or they do. And when they find the one that do, they'll bind and they'll talk to each other in the dendritic cell with all the information it knows about this virus. And it will tell the T cell exactly how to respond to it. And why that's important is because mm-hmm. you can have different types of response, and it all depends on the type of where the antigen has come from. So is it a virus? Is it a parasite? Is it a bacteria? Yep. You need a different T cell to deal with it, or a different form of the T cell. So imagine mm-hmm. it like me, right? The thing that they want, the invader, is in a boat, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to send out your land troops, yep. are you, to kill the people in the boat? You're going to send out maybe the aeroplanes, or you're going to send out another battleship, and you'll kill mm-hmm. the invading boat that way. Or if, yeah, it's a good analogy.
I like that.
Or if your invader is on the land, you're not going to send out a boat to do that. So the dendritic cell mm-hmm. tells the T cells what type of defense to make against the source of this antigen.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So
that's cool.
My project then is to try and make better skin cancer, because they're often inhibited from even getting to the tumor, sending out signals that literally blocks the DCs from even getting into the tumor. Right? Or imagine like you've got the invader in a city and it's put up all these roadblocks so that the police cars can't get into it. Right, mm-hmm. so even if the police car manages to get through that blockade in the city and get to the source, so get to the invader mm-hmm. or the tumor in this case, the tumor can then defend itself and try and fight off the dendritic cell. Right, so there's loads of things that the tumor can do to prevent the dendritic cell getting there. I want to work out mm-hmm. what it's doing, reverse that, and try and make there be more dendritic cells in the tumor. And therefore make there be more T cells mm-hmm. because the DCs are activating the T cells, more attack.
I like that.
Thank you.
So how did you get into immunology? What brought
it's
you
funny because
to
I hated
project?
Biology in school, and I think I did.
Did you? I didn't know
for
that.
For a while I wanted to be a fashion designer. And yes, designs were going to be called A-Lee Designs, because my middle name was Lee, so A-Lee. Ailey Designs. And then I quickly left that vision. I wanted to be an artist for a while.
Vision.
Then I realized.
Didn't you consider drama for a bit?
That was just a side job. But the artist thing was like a real thing for me. I wanted to go to art school. Then realized that I could just paint on the side of having a job, which turns out you can't, by the way. There's no time to paint.
No, you don't have the time.
And then I accidentally got into biology in school because I'd chosen French, and then the French class got cancelled because there wasn't enough people, and I was like, oh, I need to do biology. My biology teacher was great, and she was a parasitologist, and she told me about her stories when she'd went on exchange and she'd like been studying parasites, and one of her friends got a parasite and they looked at it wiggle about her leg. And
oh wow, you had an actual biologist teaching biology. okay, we didn't have that.
One of the sections we did, other than plants and like human physiology, was mm-hmm. the immune system. Yep. It's so cool. Like, you know, you just have that light bulb, like, didn't even know this existed. Uh-huh.
Yeah, you're like, this shit is interesting.
I had to do this, like, an advanced higher biology project. So that's kind of like, it's your last year mm-hmm. of school, and it makes you more prepared for university. This advanced higher project, and had to design our own one, and I did this hand sanitizer work.
Yeah, so relevant.
It does work, guys, don't worry. Well, I was allowed to
what did you do? Did you just put hand sanitizer on and see how much bacteria grew?
I had an eager plate which was plated with bacteria, safe uh-huh. bacteria that was allowed in a school. I wasn't allowed to use anything cool. And then I drilled little holes into the agar plate and put liquid hand sanitizer in it. And then measured the distance Ooh. Between the entrance of the hole.
You yeah. did the antibiotic the of the experiment. Hole
to the bacteria. And I worked out what dosage and what type of hand sanitizer was best. Thank you.
That's amazing. That.
And then I did immunology in uni, and I just had a really good course. There was only a few of us in the class, which meant that we got to really spend time mm-hmm. with the lecturers and be able to, like, yep. I felt like it was okay to ask questions, and it was just a nice environment.
Yeah. I'm guessing it's so niche, you wouldn't have it a huge the time, cohort and I think, of people.
So there were 17 of us, and now there's like 40, 50, and some people need to be rejected. So it's getting really, mm-hmm. it's getting popular now that people are seeing how important it is and everything. But like the first,
yes.
Oh, come back.
She's just coming with more and more.
The first ever course at university dedicated to immunology only. Because it used to be just a part of medical mm-hmm. studies, like one lecture on it, because yes. they could fit it all into one lecture. And then they realised, like, oh my God, there's a bit more to it than 2 hours worth. So this professor, she was actually the first ever woman professor at Glasgow University. She was called Taylor uh-huh. Parrott, and she started the immunology course in the 70s, and that's the first ever immunology dedicated course in the United Kingdom.
That's really cool.
Yeah, thank you. It's fun. That... People started taking it seriously, and still, like, I think people are still shocked with the amount mm-hmm. of things you can incorporate the immune system into.
Yeah. Yeah, no, like, mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. relevant in everything to this project.
I've always been interested when the immune system doesn't work properly. Like, it's cool when it works properly, but it's not yeah. as interesting. Yeah, it's cooler when it doesn't.
It's cooler when it doesn't. And I think it's
coolest when it's because your own body is messing with it. So I was interested yeah. in autoimmunity and allergies. I was really interested in allergies, actually. And mm-hmm. kind of, I also thought that hygiene hypothesis was cool. So I was kind of torn between things like about asthma and other kind yes. of allergies and autoimmunities. And then I did a project mm-hmm. for my master's on cancer. So we looked at oncolytic viruses, and basically yeah. these are viruses which infect cancer cells only. And they burst the cancer open, and mm-hmm. not only does do you not know about these?
I didn't know that. Okay, what?
So let me talk to you about these.
No,
these oncolytic viruses. So they're either engineered to, or they naturally are able to infect cancer cells better than healthy cells, and it's often because your cancer cell shuts down certain signals, which will prevent it from being infected by viruses. Because the pathway is linked to immune cell killing, right? So,
yeah. And then that same thing will attract exactly. these so
the
viruses. Virus
will go about the body, but it will only infect the tumour, okay? Mm-hmm. And then it does two things.
Oh my
so
God.
It either directly kills the tumour, so they're called oncolytic viruses because they mm-hmm. genuinely cause lysis. They burst open the cancer cells. They do three things. So once they do that, they release parts of the tumour. So the immune system, those dendritic cells, mm-hmm. can go and pick up these parts of the tumour.
Oh, exactly. And then go present them or to the T cells.
The last thing is the immune system doesn't see the tumour, but it sees the virus. And it'll induce an immune response against the virus. And where is the virus?
In the cancer.
Yes. Very cool.
Nice. I like that. That is very cool. I didn't know these viruses existed. And I'm guessing people are looking into how we can use them for cancer in general. Like, do they infect every cancer?
People are looking into them, yes, but there actually is one that's already FDA approved. I think it's called T-VEC. It's a virus that's FDA approved.
Yeah.
And yeah, people are either engineering them to just recognise the tumour. I don't know if all tumours are susceptible to them, but it's just that the properties of a tumour make it more susceptible to being virally infected. So because other cells are healthy, they can just stop the virus from infecting.
Yeah, because they can just call the immune system for help. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
So
sorry, I did your project.
That's okay. I came back to uni and I was obsessed with cancer. And I've seen this project popping up on findaphd.com, and I was just like, you know, how you were like, this is made for me, let me do cancer. studies, but also let me investigate
yes.
the immune system. And I think the nice thing about my project and also your project is that it whatever I find
mm-hmm.
will be able to be applied to the immune mm-hmm. system knowledge in general. Yep, so people could
the
use
general field,
this
yeah.
genetic cell knowledge for other parts of
yes
studies rather than just cancer.
Yeah,
so
which is why like we like the projects we do, because it takes two things we're interested in and it doesn't focus on one specifically, it
exactly.
literally combines them.
The immune system is getting a lot more popular and a lot of people are applying for these projects, and
mm-hmm.
I think it's only going to get more popular because of COVID, which is amazing that people actually are interested
yes.
now in infections and how the immune system works and vaccinations. Like, it's
yes.
really weird for me to like
But
see
like,
these
please.
things on the news every day, like vaccines, antibodies, virus, when it's things I use.
Yeah,
yeah,
because
it's
this
cool.
is stuff you do. You know when you're infected with a disease, can you
Oh,
get infected
interesting
with two
question.
diseases at
So
once?
yes, and yes, you can be infected with more than one disease at once, but if it's the
Okay.
same cell, so if you say for
Okay.
instance you have influenza in the lung,
Oh.
having an virus infection
Yes.
in that cell will induce the upregulation of these pathways that try to block any more virus getting in. Okay, so that means that another virus can't infect that same cell. But yes,
That's
you could
cool.
have a virus in your lung while having a virus in your, yeah, exactly. Well, yeah,
And like
in
one in
other
your
areas.
kidney. But like one cell
I mean, I'm
can't
not
get infected with
a
two things.
virologist, but as far as I know, they can't be, or it's very difficult to be, or one virus outcompetes the other.
So speaking of viruses, so how we know that antibiotics
Yes,
work
definitely not
against
viruses.
Bacteria. Do the antibiotics do stuff with the immune system?
Mm-hmm.
Like, because vaccines do, and we'll get into vaccines, but do antibiotics interact with the immune system in any way? Or are they more just
So
going
there'll
straight
be
for
like
the
a domino
bacteria,
effect.
killing it, and that's it?
This is a cool question. I've actually never thought of this, but when your antibiotics kill bacteria by doing a few different things. So you can have ones that lyse the bacteria, so that means burst it open, or it can make them static, so it means they can't replicate anymore. But I'd assume that those lysis ones
Yes.
will, when you burst open that, you'll burst open the bacteria,
Cause
and
inflammation.
allow exactly these dendritic cells to pick up the different parts of the bacteria and help the immune response. Does that make sense? But other domino effects of
That makes
antibiotics.
sense. Yes.
Your antibiotics aren't specific to the bad bacteria in your body, and because we have billions
Yes.
and trillions of bacteria, especially in our gut, but all over our skin and all our surfaces, exactly, all our mucosal surfaces, those antibiotics will also kill these good bacteria. So that can...
Oh.
That's why
Which
you
is
feel
why
bad.
you
You often
feel
get
a
like
bit
diarrhea
bad.
when you have antibiotics. So that can do a few things. That can make you more susceptible to bad ones colonizing the area, or it can impact the immune system in that way, because these good bacteria provide nutrients and help regulate the immune system. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And will make
Exactly.
you more susceptible to other infections
Yes.
even more. Oh, that's cool. I didn't think of that. That's nice. And so antibiotics for bacteria, vaccines for the
vaccines. You can have vaccines for lots of different things. You can have them for cancer as well. But vaccines, they have been around for hundreds of years, like even before medicine caught up.
Fun fact, don't you?
Well,
I could feel it coming. As soon as you said hundreds of years, I was like, we're getting
I should
a
be
fun fact.
I know, but I think
it's
I should
not
be
a
a
bad thing, Amy.
historian
I
and
love
not a
them.
scientist.
You should be like
Or
a
just
tour
walk
guide
down
at a
the street and be
museum.
like, fun fact.
Fun fact.
Anyway.
So, what is that?
Anyway. Podcast mode. Okay. Vaccinations have been around for hundreds of years, and before even science caught up to how they work or how to make a vaccine, people all over the world were inoculating, so they're called inoculations, inoculating themselves with bits of someone, say someone had a scab that was infected, they would take some of it and give it to someone else, and they could eat it, or they could cut their skin and rub it on them, because they had seen that doing that could prevent them from getting the real infection, right? So this happened, I mean, it wasn't very safe, and I'm sure a lot of people died from just the inoculations.
Yeah.
But the what happened was there was this woman. This is going to go, my podcast is going to be so long because it's just
no, I like it.
There was, this is so good. This lady called, she's literally called Lady Mary Montagu, and she had had a disease.
You've told me this
when she was younger. She was a beautiful woman, apparently she was beautiful, but she had suffered from smallpox, which left a lot of scars on her face, and she was no longer like a beautiful woman. But luckily, she was already married before she got the smallpox.
Luckily, bless her.
And her and her husband went to Turkey, and they seen that people were giving out these smallpox inoculations, and she was like, "I really want people to have them back in the UK." So she was from London, I think she was from. So she brought these inoculations back to London, and they started doing there, but it wasn't very. Doctors were like, "This is not a good idea." They, at the time, like, it wasn't believed that microbes could cause infections. There was this miasma theory, we thought it was bad smells could cause infections. People just weren't on board. But she brought it back. Loads of things happened, like bad clinical trials where they got prisoners on death row, and they were like, "We'll give you this inoculation, and if you survive, we'll let you out free. And if you don't survive, then you're gonna die anyway." A lot of things happened. Exactly.
Win-win, guys.
Got on board with vaccinations, and it was most commonly known, Edward Jenner. Do you have heard of him?
I've heard the name,
he noticed that we're always around cows, they weren't becoming infected with smallpox, and he thought it was because they were around cows who had cowpox, and he was like, maybe it's this inoculation thing, maybe the milkmaids are getting this cowpox and it's protecting them from smallpox. So he did some dodgy experiments where he had, like, he had his own son, and he got some other kids, and he gave them cowpox, and then he gave them smallpox, and the kids were fine. Exactly.
What a loving father.
And then the science just took off, and people seen that it was working. But how it actually works, what vaccines are, so I can actually have an ingredient list, so I can give you exactly what a vaccine is for anyone, because you hear all these things like it has these
This
is in the British Society of Immunology. So what is in a vaccine? The main ingredient is water, so it's just made up of water. You can then have, or you should have, a small part of the virus or bacteria that you're trying to protect against. So that might be they've inactivated it, so they'll kill it, but it's got all the surface receptors, and it looks like how the immune system would see it.
Yep.
Exactly.
You just need the little
immune system just needs to know what it looks
signal,
like.
Signal, doesn't it?
Or you can have live ones which have been attenuated, and that means you've cut out a part of them which will replicate. So they're live, but they can't replicate. If that makes sense. And there's new ones being developed, which are looking at just using the genetic material. These ones are probably more useful because they can activate your T cells rather than just your B cells. You want both of them. You also have these adjuvants, which I talked about, and these tell the body there's danger and try and get the immune system to come in and respond to the vaccination. An example of this would be aluminium salts. But these are, so people are like, "You've put aluminium in a vaccine?" Well,
yeah, but also, like, we need magnesium to survive. What you want water, about
breast milk, and nearly all foods, and they're all, and these foods there are high level. You also have preservatives and stabilizers, and that's just to stop the vaccine going off and like aggregating and stuff.
Especially when you need to transport it.
It'll also
stuff.
Be kept in ice and things like that, but you need to actually prevent the contamination of the molecules inside, because they can, over time, they'll change configuration and can go off. An example of that is sorbitol, also is found in fruit. Apparently, a peach contains almost 100 times more than a vaccine. Then like the last thing you have is resistant substances. And this is basically the things that were used in the manufacturing process to make the vaccine. So an example would be formaldehyde, which sounds scary, right? And that's used to kill the bacteria, say, or the virus. But again, this is naturally found in food. The amount of that's in a vaccine is 50 times smaller than is in an apple. So why I'm saying this, and it's
basically
so
a vaccine's edible, which is the point.
So yeah, but the reason I said that these genetic materials and stuff are important is because currently the vaccinations that we make only allow the immune system to recognize the outside of, say, the virus or the bacteria. And that induces a B cell response, so just mm-hmm. antibodies. But for things like your virally infected cells, you need a T cell response. And our vaccinations can't do that yet. And that's why we have to get a different flu vaccine every year, because the flu changes its surface every year.
Oh, yes. Yep. You're changing the outer protein.
Yep.
The flu is changing it every year. And so if you have the genetic material, you can
work out what genes are conserved between every single flu virus.
Have a vaccine for the conserved regions.
And then we can try and make T cells respond to beta, because currently only B cells respond to the vaccines.
That's really cool. I like that.
Thank you.
Okay. So I guess, is there any question I haven't asked that you really want to answer?
I have many fun facts.
Another fun fact?
Let's leave it.
Well, you have a lot too. Oh yeah, what have I learned today? I've learned that mm-hmm. the immune system's, well, actually I knew the immune system's involved in everything. What I learned was those viral cancer things, what are they called? Oncolytic viruses. Those things. What? So cool. I didn't know those existed. I like that. And like, there's just so many cells, and you CDs guys love abbreviations and IL, everything. CDs and DCs. When you gave your presentation, I was like, DC1, DC2,
and CXCL13, and CD19, and IL4. So, to make it clear,
and I was like, what does this mean? And you are.
Yes.
You speak immunology.
Scots, yeah,
and
Scots
like English. Scottish, can we count Scottish as another? Scots, three languages in me. You're trilingual.
Thank you.
But yes, so that's what I've learned today. Mm-hmm. So our social media is fun.
Yes, so if you want to find out more about these kind of things, follow us on Instagram at This Is The Stupid Question But, on Twitter at TIASQB, and email us suggestions or comments at This Is The Stupid Question But at gmail.com.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And in 2 weeks' time, we're going to have an episode out, which is quite exciting. So we're going to have our first guests.
What?
Because
we have no other
people. And
it's going
to be our supervisors. I'm just remembering the episode. Mm-hmm. Oh, God, it's going to be fun. We still have to edit that. Yes, we're going to have our supervisors on. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Prime Gamage and Dr. Ed Roberts are going to be on.
What
and
is a PhD?
We just talk about academia and PhD.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, tune in 2 weeks from now where we talk about what is mm-hmm. a PhD with our first guests, which is going to be exciting. And then after that, we're taking a season break.
That we imagine, it's just because we're tired.
We're just tired. Mm-hmm. And we thought this would be a good little end to our, mm-hmm. we're going to officially call it our first season. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully after Christmas, we'll be back probably mm-hmm. with more stupid questions to answer, which will be fun. But yeah, so we're very excited for next week's episode. very excited to edit it. So we'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye.